Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey with Edible Arrangements. Edible Arrangements franchisees join a brand with 16 years of growth, 1,200 stores, and millions of visitors to ediblearrangements.com. You can discover why Entrepreneur Magazine named Edible Arrangements among their best of the best for 2015. Start your journey to sweet success as an Edible Arrangements franchisee at edible.com or call 1-888-727-4258.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It's very, very cool of you to join me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a creative and somewhat reluctant, yet awesome entrepreneur. She is the founder of The Sherman Project, an effective and empowering program that ignites meaningful and measurable well-being transformations. She's also the founder of BeStrongPeaceful.com, where she offers holistic well-being programs and has created a vibrant community. Prior to becoming an entrepreneur, she studied under healers and scholars from all around the world and has completed her PhD at the University of Minnesota with a research focus in healing therapies for well-being promotion. Now, let's hack Amy Prasek. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by the incorporation experts at BizFilings. For a job done right, you've got to go to the experts. And when it comes to incorporation, that means BizFilings.com. There, the process is clearly laid out for you with step-by-step guidance from on-demand professionals. Incorporation can bring you savings, protections, and growth. So you don't want to do it in just any old website. BizFilings has been at it for nearly 20 years, founded by entrepreneurs who set out to create the kind of experience they'd want if they had to do it all over again. Straightforward information, absolutely clarifying tools, and instant access to experts via email, phone, or chat. You may not have incorporation all figured out just yet, but a quick visit to BizFilings is a step in the right direction. Go to bizfilings.com/start. for a free guide to get a clear line of sight into your incorporation. That's bizfilings.com/start. And welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have a very, very, very special guest. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Hi.
All right. Amy, I think we should jump straight into this. What do you say?
Sounds excellent.
All right. Amy, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, so I know it's probably, when I think about this, isn't the most common answer. So I kind of want to fall back onto like the entrepreneurial buzzwords of like perseverance and patience. And those are totally necessary. But I think those are kind of like human virtues, and we kind of fall back on those. So I think to get a little bit more specific, I think the most unique, probably an important contribution to my success, which I think is a big concept, we could dig into that later if you like, has been like a really conscious effort to create what I sort of identify as like the entrepreneurial space. And so by space, I'll try to explain this as concisely as I can. It's really about sort of the very micro level environments that we find ourselves in as entrepreneurs, like on a daily basis. So, and it's this idea that we can create space, right? So acknowledging sort of the responsibilities of space, like the financial or maintenance responsibilities of space, that can create more optimal well-being. And so kind of when I realized the unfortunate truth that I was to be an entrepreneur, we can talk about that later as well, if you like, I kind of knew immediately that I wanted to create a space, you know, that micro level sort of environments that could facilitate like the most healthy entrepreneurial life, and a space also that could support my husband's well-being too. So he's a firefighter and a public safety officer. But creating that space that could facilitate both that well-being and entrepreneurial journey. So I think there's kind of like three steps to that process. And the first one is really identifying the details for a space that could support my well-being. And for me, I knew that was, you know, a big garden that I could sort of dig my hands into and ground that sometimes like anxious entrepreneurial energy. Well, I think many people can relate to that. I also wanted a dog, which certainly evidence supports increased productivity when pets are sort of in the working space. But of course, more so because I just love dogs. Like, so we needed, you know, a space, a living space that could enable that, like a fenced yard, a safe walking neighborhood. And then the second thing that we sort of dug into, so my husband and I did this, you know, this was a very conscious effort about 10 years ago, was then to identify the type of space that I needed to sort of help a business succeed. So, you know, to get detailed, really, you know, I wanted a designated workspace in the house or an apartment, maybe even an outside office space when money enabled in the future. And I got like really specific about paint colors. I wanted a chalkboard wall so I could like do some storyboarding and things like that. Content calendars sort of in a different type of medium and sort of other details that sort of set that space for of grounding for the business that was based on, you know, creativity, compassion, focus, and my work ethic. So I knew I needed a vehicle, things like that. And now I think the last thing that we did was to identify the challenges that we'd face for the first 10 years of being an entrepreneur. I should note with a part-time job to pay for the bills, that was something that I needed to do. And this is a much harder step, I think, to do, but it was really important for us. So what we did was really note like the challenges really in these areas of sort of body or physical challenges, mental or emotional challenges, and really like the energetic and spiritual challenges that entrepreneurs face. And for me, when thinking about physical, I mean, you can certainly think about like the lack of exercise that many of us get when we're strapped to our desk for multiple hours during the day, but also, you know, very much like the financial responsibilities. So we prepared ourselves to really make like very little money for the first 10 years. So that meant no honeymoon, no lavish vacations, no mortgage, no car payments, no kid to feed, a small house or apartment, like really big life decisions. And these very conscious decisions really allowed us to not work ourselves to death, right? And not make sucking dollars out of people sort of the foundation of the business. So it allowed for a lot of freedom there. And then we dug into like the emotional and mental challenges. So maybe many can relate to sort of maybe the mental challenge of sort of feeling like an imposter, right? When you first step out. And also the energetic or spiritual challenges. For example, like when you're beginning and maybe blogging and your mom is the only one reading and you feel like, gosh, I'm not doing anything to serve this world, those types of challenges. So then what we did was sort of take all of these sort of spatial needs and then the challenges and we assessed. So it was really, how can the space and our responsibilities of that space support our well-being, right? How can these things work together and sort of help support like the bumpy entrepreneurial journey and our well-being at the same time? Yeah, so it's been a really wonderful effort, very strategic but creative sort of life designing effort. And like so broadly right now, you know, we rent an upper level duplex. It's like 600 square feet, but I still have a huge garden and we have a fabulous dog named Bacon and we don't have car payments. You know, all our cars are 10 years old. So it's sort of this odd strategy, but I think it's been one of the biggest contributions to the success of the business because I can still do the business. I can still be part of it because we've created that space.
Wow. That's awesome.
Does that make any sense?
No, it totally makes sense. And it's, I mean, you summed it up when you said it's been very, very strategic. I mean, you said conscious decisions, conscious effort, conscious frugality, conscious like workspaces, conscious like play spaces outside of it to ground yourself.
Yeah.
Do you ever think that you possibly overplan?
That is a great question.
I don't want to be rude. I'm not trying to be rude about it. I'm just wondering, like, you nailed it when you, at the very last part, you said lifestyle design, which most people talk about lifestyle design, but they don't actually consciously design the life that they want. And they're not willing to accept the, like you said, like 10-year-old cars and like a small house. They're not willing to accept those things for the loftier goal of where their life could be in the long term.
Right.
They talk about it, but you actually have done it. But it takes a lot of planning.
Yeah, you know, it took, and we revisit sort of these choices and where we are, you know, frequently, my husband and I. But I think I think there's this sort of, there's over planning, absolutely. So I have no idea what the business will look like in 5 years. And I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that mystery of it. And I love the movement and sort of that agile nature of it. But, you know, there's this interplay, I think, between structure and sort of like, also like this idea of law of attraction. And I think entrepreneurs, at times we get stuck in this idea like, oh, if I only want it bad enough, or if I only work hard enough, if I only add more hours, if I only believe in myself enough, you know, that there's no other sort of structures around your work ethic or your belief that will facilitate your success. And I think that that's a big lie. And it then forces us to overwork ourselves and sort of just keep spinning our wheels and have obligations that are outside of the business, or, you know, sort of extra obligations that keep us distracted. And that's fine, you know, if you are maybe doing it as a hobby, or, you know, it's not something that you want to make a living wage out of. But if it's something that is going to be your life, this entrepreneurial life, then I think that there's a very important structure to create, just because that's how it works. The first 10 years are rough. And if you're out living that, you know, and we see that commonly, I'll see it around my friends who are just working so many hours to get by, but they also, you know, expensive cars and mortgages, and that's fine. You know, we make choices. And they commonly ask my husband, like, how are you able to have your weekends off and play softball at night and goof off and play and do those wonderful things, dig in the garden, all that stuff? And a big part of that is because we have very little financial obligations, and it's been strategic. And I swing a little bit more, I could say, to the extreme, because I've seen the damage that it can do. You know, my father was an entrepreneur, and he lived way beyond his means for a variety of reasons. You know, both in the fact that, you know, if I drive this type of car and have this type of office and bring my clients in, then they'll think I'm a more professional, more astute business person. And I think that's a lie that we tell ourselves. And it just keeps us going on and on at the same thing without really grounding the energy into the work that's being done. So, yeah, I play a lot. And I think also, I'm sorry, I'm taking us around in different.
It's totally good. I'm loving it.
Tangents. Okay. The other thing that I think is important is it's this that gets discussed so often is this work-life balance. And as a well-being researcher, so a lot of my work is sort of investigating well-being programs, well-being strategies, techniques, and integrative health practices. It's this idea of like this work-life balance that it's this false dichotomy, essentially saying that, okay, well, a third of your life when you're working really doesn't count for much. But here's this other third when you're, you know, sleeping. And then there's this other third that you'll try to make the best you can do through a number of strategies. And I think we set ourselves up with this work-life false dichotomy. And it sets an intention for kind of this really crappy one-third of our life where we're working just to get by. And then, you know, a third of sleeping, and then a third of, well, maybe, you know, I'll find my life purpose or some fulfillment in that other third. And that was something that I very consciously wanted to create through kind of thinking about the space that there is no work and there is no life. Like, we're either alive or we're not. And so how do you create a space that facilitates purpose, meaning, and well-being in every aspect of your living? And that meant getting, you know, a little bit more simple, simplifying, not having as many obligations, so that both the work and the non-working hours, whatever you want to call those times, were equally meaningful and not overly stressful. You know, it was the destruction of my father to separate those two and to put up sort of those false senses of security and, you know, those indulgences that really aren't necessary as entrepreneurs, I would say. You know, we can get by on a lot less. And so
we can, yeah.
Yeah, it was a wonderful lesson that he taught me. So it's how can you make meaning both in your working hours, those first eight, perhaps the next eight after that, and sleep well the following eight? Like, how can that all be very, very simple and pure and meaningful and fulfilling?
Yeah.
So I know that's all big concepts, but that's what you're working with an entrepreneur, right? I mean, like,
well, you should be, right? But people, I think, mistake it when they try and get into entrepreneurship. And especially when you come from the like workaday world of the office or something, it's a huge transformation because you're right. That work, that 30% of work is work, but it's meaningful and it's not, there's no separation between work and life in that way. And that doesn't mean because you work all the time.
Right.
It's just that it's not, you're not forced and it's, and there's meaning. And that's like, literally, you're not waiting for the next 30% of your day to get meaning and draw meaning out of your life. That first 30% is where it can come from.
Yeah.
And then you still have the next 60%. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's vital. I mean, if you find yourself in sort of like, oh, frick, it's Monday. Like, oh, I can't wait for Friday. Like the moment I get to those places, I'm like, whoa, where have I shifted my priorities or my intentions or my space in a way that is depleting from my well-being? I don't, you know, and I've worked for some soul-sucking companies and jobs that just suck, I'll be honest. But it's like, okay, how can I find meaning in this in such a way? It might just be in collaboration with colleagues or, you know, friendship relationship there if the work is really, you know, not doing quite the best work perhaps for this world. But yeah, I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we're hating Mondays and loving Fridays because, you know, Saturday and Sunday, that's only 2 days. So, So I'm trying to create a space that can facilitate 7 days of, you know, something more than just the love-hate of Mondays and Fridays, but something that is nourishing, you know, all the way through the week. And it's not to say that I don't fail in those in those strategies and become overwhelmed with stress at times, but, you know, then it's just recalibrate. Reassess, okay, like how can I sort of shift a few things around? You know, where have I lost my navigation a bit?
And stress can be fun to a certain level, I at least find, like within certain projects and it's within like a finite amount of time. And there's like a launch coming and there's pressure. It's, to me, it's enjoyable because it's not constant and it's just now. And then it's like we can completely pull back after that for a few months. But that's like all part of the highs and the lows and the pushes and the pulls of being an entrepreneur. And it's the fact that every day is not the same. That to me is awesome.
Yeah.
That's what makes it exciting, right?
Well, and I think you nailed on something that's really important too for entrepreneurs. So this idea that like stress can be healthy and in the short term, right? So that's not this chronic 24/7 experience with stress.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, stress can be really healthy, right? We're working on this resilience. You know, we're sort of taking our system to a little bit of a challenge point, and then we can pull back and then go into a state of, you know, calm or relaxation. So you'll see that with animals. You know, so if a predator is chasing the prey, for instance, like a cheetah is, or a large cat is chasing a small rodent or something, like a rabbit or something. So the rabbit's being chased and it is fleeing for its life. It is in an acute state of high stress. And so, you know, the rabbit avoids the predator. It survives the chase. The predator leaves. And then the animal comes out. That rabbit comes out. It sits for a moment and then it shakes. It shakes so extreme. You can just see every little muscle, every little cell in its body is shaking off sort of this stress response, right? So it's releasing the tension, the elevated hormones, all the things that sort of send us into this stress response. It just kind of shakes it out. And I think as entrepreneurs, we rarely have the time to like shake it out. And if you don't designate that space or time to release the stress, then we're in a chronic state of stress. And that's when, you know, we're having those negative health outcomes that result from high stress, chronic high stress situations, you know, and that's part of the space. So something that I've been very strategic in doing is when I enter my office space or sit down at the computer, there's two things I do. The first is I set an intention, I light a candle. And the second thing I do is put on like a shawl or some type of wrap. And there was one that I had received in India when I was studying there. So I'll put that on myself. And now I've set the space for my work. And it might be stressful, it might be frustrating, that's fine. And then at the end of the day, I extinguish the candle and I take off the shawl and I leave. You know, so that space is done, that work is done, that stress might be, right, just sat back on that chair, it's released, I'm not taking it with me, I release that shawl, and I go into a new space. So I think those very conscious efforts of space distinction, right, and releasing stress, you know, digging your hands in the garden, exercising, meditating, whatever it might be for you, are so important.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So we need to go back, because you've mentioned it sort of in passing a few times, but I think I really want to hear the story of, because there's this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize finally that they have this calling to make something big and make a difference, or they can't work for somebody else. They realize that they are an entrepreneur. And at some point you realize this. Could you, Amy, tell me about when this happened for you?
Sure. Yeah. So it's not like an aha moment. It was like, oh, crap moment.
But it's so often what it is.
Right. Yeah, because man, there's so many easier ways to make a living wage than to be an entrepreneur, I'll tell you. So, I mean, it's not always a great thing. You know, we sort of put entrepreneurs up on a pedestal, but it's like, oh man, like that's like, gosh, no, it's sometimes I think it's, you know, it's a cross to bear here. It's not an ideal situation. sometimes it's the only way to get the work out. And that's what I've realized. So mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially when I was probably right around 17, I started realizing, you know, that my dad was an entrepreneur and he was into tech startups in the 90s. So that was the big boom stuff happening. He was really involved in that. And I started realizing, you know, oh yeah, he's doing his own thing, but I didn't quite know or understand what he was doing because, you know, he was working a lot and didn't like to talk about his work because it didn't give him much fulfillment. He was sort of he went into entrepreneurship because he wanted to make money. It was fundamentally, that was the reason. And he was a good businessman. And so, you know, he really did himself in, quite honestly, and committed suicide when I was 18. And it was, I really believe it had a lot to do with his lifestyle as an entrepreneur, among many other variables, of course, certainly. But he was working so many hours and he was so chronically stressed out. And he was doing work, quite honestly, that he didn't care a bit about. You know, he was making enough money so that we could live lavishly. Not that I ever cared to live lavishly. And that's a lot of what has influenced my own sort of design of creating a life that is a little bit more simplistic. But so, you know, that really, quite honestly, was a big part of sort of his self-destruction, again, among many other variables. But something that I realized was that, you know, he was this tech startup. He was really into technology. And I started finding myself into that space as well when I was looking through, when I was doing some grief counseling and things after his death. I found myself on online forums, looking through grief forums and, you know, forums with depression and anxiety, all of those things that I was really struggling with after his death. And I found some support in those spaces because I didn't have access to quality mental health care. You know, as US, we have a different system. I'll just use the word different in quotes because I would love to say many other things. But I found relief online, which was interesting because online tech work was a big player in the destruction of my father. And so it was, I don't remember quite the night, but I remember sitting, and this was when I was, I think 20, and I was thinking, gosh, like, how can I create more access? I finally found a little bit of relief online. I had been doing I had access through my college to a yoga course and a breathwork course, and I found amazing sort of senses of peace and relief and healing through those practices as well, but I couldn't afford them outside of, you know, the courses that I was taking as part of my degree. And so I sat there thinking, there's got to be a way to create more access to these practices, you know, effective, accessible, engaging. And it came heavy to me, like, the only way to do this is online. And I was so pissed off. Like, are you kidding me? How does this work? How is it that, you know, this online world, you know, kind of sucked my dad in a really negative way And now the only way I can think of promoting these practices and offering some type of relief to other people who might be suffering in a similar way is through online tools. Like it just pissed me off. And so, yeah, I realized at that moment, the only way I could do it was really to do my own sort of my own work online. And so I did some courses through college to sort of help me prepare for that work. And it took me a long time. It wasn't until 2007 when I launched a blog that really started to hit on this work. So it was about probably 4 or 5 years later of sort of preparation and fear and paralysis and fighting this notion that I would have to be an entrepreneur in the online world. And finally, I just, you know, said, well, F it. You know, this is the work that I'm called to do, and I feel so passionate about it. I got to get over this fear. And you can still be brave and courageous through fear. I had to keep telling myself that and just do the work. And so, yeah, I did that in 2007. And here it is in 2015. There's been some big iterations to the work and some pauses and some challenges, but I'm just grateful to be here now and to be doing it in a way that I think honors the work of my father and the lessons that I learned that you can do this. You can do this entrepreneurial journey, this online world, in a way that is nourishing and that you don't have to sacrifice your well-being to be successful. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And it's so necessary what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So my question for you is, does entrepreneurship turn, like, there's a big thing, well, it's not nearly as big as it should be, but there's people sort of talking quietly now, and there are some posts I've read about like the correlation of like depression and stuff amongst founders and entrepreneurs and the stress levels and the pushing and the constant struggles. So is it entrepreneurship that does this to us, or is it entrepreneurship that draws us to this? That we already have these qualities within us. Is it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is it because, especially with the depression, I mean, there's the ups and the downs, right? We don't want something just, and I mean, I deal with this in my own life, and it's, I think it's because I don't want some, I can't deal with just the constant, like, I know I'm going to go to this office for the next 10 years because it's too just blah. I'll just get completely bored. I need super highs and I need super lows to feel them, I guess. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I think this is something that we deal with. And I've had this discussion with people, but I think you might have a better insight into it than anybody I've got to speak to.
Yeah, you know, there's not, as far as I'm aware of, a whole lot of specific literature looking at sort of the qualities of entrepreneurs. And it's becoming more common now, that work and that investigation. But here's my two cents. So I think that, and you asked this question that makes me think of this too. When you ask, was it a calling to do this entrepreneurial work, or were you sort of fed up? And so this fed up notion is something that I think is part of the entrepreneurial qualities, traits. And so here's what I think. I think that entrepreneurs are more inclined to be creative individuals, to be leaders, to think outside of the box. And along with those qualities and traits come sort of tendencies to try to do it all. Right, so you have this idea of solopreneurs. I hate that term, as if we do something all by ourselves. And that's the detriment of an entrepreneur, right? When you start to think, well, I'm the only one that can do this, and I'm just going to buckle down, sit down at my computer, you know, in this little den and not come out for 16 hours. I mean, I can't think of anything worse for not only your creative spirit, but just, you know, your human spirit. Anything more self-destructive than that. But there's these tendencies of entrepreneurs, I think, to go to that extreme. Because if you're able to sort of think outside of the box and be creative, you likely have a tendency to move through these bigger, deeper, perhaps, emotions, or at least, you know, you're able to sort of feel them in your body and maybe communicate them, the highs and lows, right? Sort of the depression and the manic. I'm not addressing, you know, anything on the illness spectrum here, but mm-hmm. we're able to sort of move through those emotions maybe in a deeper way or feel them a little deeper. Sometimes these are called like emotionally sensitive people or empath, things like that. So you're sort of moving through these spectrums of the highs and lows a little bit more, but you're also maybe inclined to buckle down a little harder, do the work alone by yourself. And so, yeah, I think it's these qualities that create the entrepreneur. And that's why I say, like, oh, crap, I don't want to be an entrepreneur, because that means, yeah, I do. I do have those tendencies. I go, you know, and thank God for him. He is a very grounded individual. And when I'm experiencing like the lows of imposter syndrome and, you know, I'm never going to be able to do this. Who am I to say anything? All of those things, you know, he grounds that extreme for me. And then I'll cycle into, oh, I'm on the top of the world. I can do this work. No problem. You know, so, but it takes that energy, I think, to be an entrepreneur. So how can you navigate that more skillfully? And that's why I think I've been very strategic in creating a structure and a space to support those extremes. Because it's not bad. It's not bad to, you know, experience depression. Absolutely not. That's a human experience. It's not bad to experience anxiety. You know, that's also a human experience and something that is great, you know, to inform how you move in this world and to protect your safety and things like that. So, but I think the problem is generally entrepreneurs ignore those emotions or those experiences and just try to do more work because you can. You know, when you're at a 40-hour a week job or more than that, but you know, when you're at a corporation, it's a little harder to, you know, go in at 3 a.m. and isolate yourself and type away until, you know, 2 days later and sort of chronically work through those periods of times when maybe you should be, you know, kind of addressing the emotions that are happening. So I don't know if that quite explains it, but I think it's the unique qualities and traits of entrepreneurs, and they're tough to navigate, but when they're navigated well, you know, you see the success that comes from those creative, deeper emotions, the ability to be empathic, all of those sort of deeper experiences of the human condition, you're able to apply them skillfully in your work and maintain your well-being. Like then, I think then you're doing the good work of an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And complete and total self-awareness, yeah, is what I think you keep talking about. Like you really have to be aware of these things and don't like fight depression, and not like depression, like you say, like in a clinical way. Of course, we're not talking that. But I mean, just the ups and the, like, these are human emotions that you have to feel, anxiety, stress. These are parts of it. But then if you're aware of it, you can then deal with it, and you can then either feed off of it for short periods of time if you need to and use it to push yourself. And you can also use it to be like, okay, it's time to go out in the garden and put my hands in the dirt because this is too much, right? Yeah. But it's self-awareness.
Absolutely. And that sucks. I mean, when you start getting into self-awareness, you realize, like, you know, the pieces of yourself that you rather just sort of push away, you know? And that's part of the entrepreneurial journey too, because, you know, when you're with a bigger company and you have the checks and balances of a system, that can be really beneficial. You know, you can sort of modulate those personalities a little bit more skillfully through a structure. So you kind of have to create the same thing, I think, as an entrepreneur, because it's just you and you're going through the highs and lows and the ridiculous extremes at times by yourself, you know, as far as, you know, the work goes. So yeah, how can you create the space and create the support system so that you can communicate, you know, those experiences and you know, have that self-aware, that practice of self-awareness and collaboration with others, you know, and not being ashamed of that journey. I mean, that's a deep journey, and to do it as part of your business too. Yeah, it can be messy. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And I also find it really interesting that how you mention your husband in this, because I should probably start a show like Hack the Entrepreneur's Spouse.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how they deal with it, especially if I can get it when like they're both entrepreneurs, because they like, it's probably just complete chaos on both sides.
I cannot imagine that.
But having like the one spouse that isn't and the spouse that is, and dealing with like all of our like personal struggles and then like work struggles and financial struggles and just like sitting there and being like, yeah, no, you should just keep going.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it would be interesting just to talk to more spouses and just get the other. It's like talking to two founders. They're always completely different, at least the successful ones. So, and I think that lots of our spouses are that way too, especially like that whole imposter, like I shouldn't be doing this or this shouldn't be working. It's like, but you wanted it to work. And yeah, so
that support system is huge. So if somebody, you know, doesn't have a partner or a significant other, like in their space close by to offer that support, I think it's really important to connect with other entrepreneurs or friends that can offer you those words and that you can be totally real with. I mean, there's times where I'm like, you know, I've been literally crying on the kitchen floor like a four-year-old, just letting it all go. And, you know, just to have a rub on the back and like, it's okay. Your website isn't going to crash. You know, it's something stupid. You know, nobody was even on the website. It was like, you know, it didn't matter that the email link wasn't active. Nobody clicked on it. But of course, that was the straw that sent me into a spiral. And just to have somebody rub your back and say, you're going to be okay. It's okay. Oh, it's just huge. And maybe it's a pet, you know, that helps too. Mm-hmm. A dog can offer that companionship and that compassion. But yeah, it's not a solopreneurship. If it is, then I'm concerned for you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it would be, could be as successful. I mean, that's why everybody, I mean, Facebook private groups now are so massive. Yeah. I mean, conferences, everything, right? Especially just virtual things and meetups in your town. If you can't travel far, they're so essential. And once you start doing them and reaching out to other people that are going through these or have gone through these things, it's massive.
Yeah, you nailed it. I think so. And, you know, my heart just pains when I think about the experience that my father had, because that was pre sort of the connectivity of what the internet really has done now, the social connectivity. You know, those outlets weren't available for like the online mm-hmm. entrepreneurs of the 90s and early 2000s. They were, you know, sitting at their desk all alone trying to navigate this space. And, you know, you could say that about other ventures as well, you know, that maybe sort of have more isolating characteristics. But yeah, we are in a time where the connections are there. And if you're not taking advantage of them, I honestly think your chances of succeeding are just cut in half immediately. And I know your chances of optimal well-being are cut in half immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, Amy, this has been, it's been a great conversation. It's been really good. And I think that it's one that needs to be shared. And I think it's one that, I think this whole topic that you're trying to cover is so deep and so necessary and so helpful to so, so many people. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it has to be done online to get the reach and the magnitude that it needs to get out there. And I think that there's such a high percentage of us that deal with these things that it's probably scary and probably shocking once actual numbers come out and people finally start opening up and all admitting the struggles that we do have internally and personally.
Absolutely. Those are normal. Yeah.
They are, exactly. And that's why people do need to open up about it. And that's why I'm glad we got to have this conversation. And so Be Strong Peaceful, you've been doing it for a number of years now?
Yeah. I mean, it started off in 2007 as a blog, Wellness Gossip. And that went on for 4 years. And it was a wonderful community that I built and that we created together as a community. But I did everything wrong. I didn't have an email list. I didn't have anything. I didn't have any revenue plan. It was just hilarious how unstrategic it was. But I was also going through grad school. And so it was a time for experimentation. That was really cool. But ultimately, yeah, you know, I took a pause for about a year and a half away from the work and really just kind of rebranded. And so now it's Be Strong Peaceful, which is really focused on public health communication, sort of creating a whole new ecosystem to deliver really effective, you know, evidence-based, engaging, accessible, integrative health resources, mainly focused on mindfulness-based practices. So mindful eating, mindfulness meditation, and mindful movement. So delivering those in new ways and creating communities and support around those ideas. So it's really fun. I love it. And now I just finally graduated after 15 years of academia. So I'm so excited to start really digging into the work with people who are ready to dive into this stuff. Yeah. This practice of mindfulness, this practice of mindful awareness, self-awareness to promote well-being and to kind of move out of those chronic states of stress.
Nice. And I know that you're conscious of all this stuff and that you're happy to be able to dive into it now. So what's the big goal you have for, say, the next year within your business?
Well, now that I'll be mainly full-time, I mean, I do some consulting work on the side, but mainly full-time, I'm really excited to, quite honestly, see if I can maintain well-being while building a business. So I know that sounds silly, but you know what, conceptually, it's something that, you know, I've researched, studied, practiced part-time for the last 10 years, but I really, you know, going full-time, working on building a business, and I have some goals around that. I want to see if I can do it while maintaining my own well-being and creating a space that people can flourish as well. So, and I think it's really coming down to those ideas that we hear as entrepreneurs, is that you have to overwork and sort of this martyred attitude, this behavior that sacrifices your life for 10 years so that you can retire at like 45. I have no interest in that. I want to do the work until I die. So in ways that are manageable and meaningful. So that's what I'm really excited about actually this year. Clearly, of course, I want to make enough money to pay for our small apartment space and dog food and good healthy food for myself and my husband. But beyond that, it's pretty simple. I want to see if I can do it. You know, I've been inspired by my father to do good work in the world, but do it in a way that I don't have to sacrifice my own self-care. So I want to see if I can do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm sure you can. So how to maintain well-being while building a business. I love it. I think we have a title for an episode.
Yeah. That would be a good episode. Yeah. In a year, I'll tell you if it's possible.
Very cool.
For me.
Awesome. So bestrongpeaceful.com is the website and on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
Amy, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for the work you're doing. And thank you so much for the work you're going to continue to do into the future and the people that you're going to help, myself included, and hopefully many of our listeners as well. And yeah, just please keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Oh, thank you, John. Yeah. And if any of your listeners want to email me, the best one actually to get me is Amy, A-I-M-E-E, at shermanproject.com. So Sherman Project is kind of our foundational well-being mindfulness program. But if they email me there, you know, if just to talk about the experiences of maintaining well-being while being an entrepreneur, I would love to have those conversations back and forth and help support some of your listeners, because it's a big passion of mine. And I know that we sometimes quickly sacrifice our self-care. So if any of your listeners want to reach out to me and just have some conversations, I can pass on some resources too for them.
Very cool. So Amy at shermanproject.com is the place.
Yeah, I think that's the best for your listeners to reach me out. They'll be the quickest answers and we can have some nice conversations there.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much for that offer to everyone. Please take Amy up on that if you are so inclined or you feel you need it.
Yeah.
And yeah, just thanks again, Amy. This has been a lot of fun.
Oh, good, John. Thanks for your time.
Amy, thank you so much for joining me today. That was a lot of fun. And I thank you for just being so open, honest, transparent, whatever the word is you want to use for it. But I thank you for just being so honest and sincere with me today during that conversation, because I think that it's going to be very helpful for a lot of people, and it's a topic that really needs to be discussed more, and so I thank you for doing that work and just talking with me today. So Amy, the reluctant yet awesome entrepreneur that we just heard from, is a very, very, very smart lady, and she said a lot of smart things during this conversation. But as I go back through it, there's one thing that stands out to me. One thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Entrepreneurs are more inclined to be creative individuals, to be leaders, to think outside of the box. And along with those qualities and traits come sort of tendencies to try to do it all, right? So you have this idea of solopreneurs. I hate that term, as if we do something all by ourselves. And that's the detriment of an entrepreneur, right? When you start to think, well, I'm the only one that can do this. And I'm just going to buckle down, sit down at my computer, you know, in this little den and not come out for 16 hours. I mean, I can't think of anything worse for not only your creative spirit, but just, you know, your human spirit. Anything more self-destructive than that.
And that's the hack. Amy. Yes, and I absolutely love this focus on being conscious of ourselves, our well-being, and our creative sort of and human just tendencies and the way we need to be. And so you're right. Entrepreneurs are creative people. We create something out of nothing, whatever that happens to be, if that's a blog and writing, or that's a business or an app, or there's any number of things. I've interviewed so many people doing so many different things that I personally like to push the boundaries of what we call an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurship to me is creating something out of nothing and putting that out into the world. And hopefully the world gives you back some sort of value back. And you can hopefully do this enough to never have to work again at a job. That's how entrepreneurship works. And it's done in every magnitude and in every sort of market. But it's true. We're creative people. We're leaders in a way that we do have to get our ideas across to other people and either get them to trade us money for this service or product, or get people to work with us and for us. And I think the thinking outside the box is we're just naturally creative and wacky, I think. So I think that's where she was going. But it's true, this whole solopreneur thing, which I don't hold it in such a negative context as Amy. Solopreneur to me is amazing. Like, we have this freedom now to create really cool businesses from laptops that can be opened up in any coffee shop and anywhere in the world, whether it's just at your house all the time or you want to travel. And this is amazing. People are building million-dollar, multi-million-dollar businesses all the time from laptops as solos with people virtually around them helping them. But she does hit on that, and she does say how we have this tendency to think that this can't be done by anyone else, which is probably the absolute worst thing that you can do. And I get how she says with solopreneurism, it pushes that boundary of it's a solo endeavor, and it's never a solo endeavor. There's so many people around us helping us. There's so many people around us pushing us, and so many people around us that we probably use their services or products or apps to make things work. It's not just us. And we also have to build audiences around us that will then hopefully give us money for the value we put into the world. And that's where our businesses come from. This is not solo in any way. So I fully agree with Amy. And I agree that, like Chris Ducker, which Chris Ducker came out on Monday. If you haven't listened to Chris Ducker, his Tropical Think Tank is the reason why this show exists. You should go back and listen to his episode because it's awesome. And he is a big proponent of this because he wiped himself out years ago by running like hundreds of people through his company, employees, and just working himself to death as the CEO of his company. And he had to remove himself and become a virtual CEO. And as Amy says, like the 16-hour day, she couldn't think of anything worse for your creative and human spirit. And it's absolutely, absolutely true. That's not a way to live. It's not a way to run a business or grow a business. We have to be more self-aware of our well-being and our, like, outside of our business. We have to allow ourselves, like Amy, and that's why I love this conversation, is because just her hands in the earth working in her garden. And I hate gardening, Amy. Sorry, I do, but I totally get it. I play drums. I play drums a couple nights a week still, and I just have to do it. It's like my meditation where I think about nothing. If I'm thinking about stuff, I can't play properly. And we need that. We need time away from our businesses. We need time away from our thoughts to allow ourselves freedom to be creative and think in new ways and make our brain work in new ways. Neurons, I think. I'm not sure. I'm not a scientist, but you know where I'm getting with it. It's this freedom that we do need. And I love this conversation because Amy is so conscious of this and really, truly creating a lifestyle business. And I really, 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 really enjoyed myself. Thank you so much, Amy. That was a lot of fun. So that's it. This was another fairly long episode. I hope you're enjoying it. Dane Maxwell was last week, and his went long and kind of wacky, but I've got some amazing feedback. A couple of you totally did not like it. You didn't like him just sort of, he played the politician thing, didn't, I would ask him a question directly and he would kind of evade it. But then I would pull him back and it was great. It was a lot of fun. And he has some wacky ideas as well. Dane Maxwell last week, Dane Maxwell and Chris Ducker, both go to hacktheentrepreneur.com. On the right-hand sidebar, there's a search. Just type in Ducker or Dane or Maxwell and you'll find them both. Take a listen, then let me know what you think. John, J-O-N, at hacktheentrepreneur.com is my email, or just come find me on Twitter, John Naster. And yeah, I'd love to have a conversation and love to hear what you think. But it's been fun. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.